Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tune in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to This Miraculous Life, recording live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Oliveri Olumba. And I am a life coach. I was voted best life coach in Washington, D.C. 2 years in a row, the past 2 years. And I have my master's degree in positive psychology, which is essentially the scientific study of human thriving. And also, I am a human being who has beliefs and opinions and thoughts. So this show is essentially a bringing together of those things. And the core belief on which this show was founded is the belief that life is a profoundly amazing, deep, precious, phenomenal opportunity and gift, and that there is a lot of bullshit that gets in the way of us experiencing it that way on a day-to-day basis. And the purpose of this show is to respond to thoughts, questions, letters from our listeners that are getting in the way of them connecting with the miraculousness of life on a day-to-day basis. So our goal each episode is to help you tune in with the miraculousness of life and liberate yourself from the bullshit. So let's dive in. So 2 weeks ago, I addressed an article that I thought was important on millennial burnout. And the article is basically talking about how burnout amongst millennials is not an acute condition, but rather a chronic condition that has resulted from us millennials being raised from a very young age to be achievement focused and to be constantly trying to optimize ourselves and our behavior and our way of engaging with the world in order to best succeed. And as a result, we have developed sort of a belief system that we need to constantly be working, doing, thinking about how to make sure that we are successful and really measuring and assessing ourselves on the things that we do and do not achieve. And so the article, I believe the author's name is Anne Helen Peterson. And she wrote the article for BuzzFeed. So if you haven't seen it, you should look it up. But the most important thing, so she writes this beautiful article about why millennials are so burned out. And it resonated deeply with a lot of people that I know, myself included. And the thing that she sort of says right at the end is basically overcoming this burnout is not going to result from going to a yoga class or going on a retreat or what have you, but that it has to be sort of a mindset and lifestyle change. But she doesn't give a lot of insight as to how we can make that lifestyle change. And so that is what I want to talk about today, because that's what we all need to know, right? So I want to speak a little bit about my own personal experience, but I also want to integrate some concepts that we've already talked about on the show. And I think, you know, if you read this article, I think that what it really is coming down to is saying that millennials are so burned out because from a very young age, they have already been being indoctrinated with what on this show we call these demons, right? And demons are also another way of saying contingencies of self-worth. And a contingency of self-worth is any criteria on which you as an individual have staked your worth. And so, for example, having a certain type of job, making a certain amount of money, looking a certain way, being liked by certain people, all of those things can become ways in which we assess our value and our worth as human beings, thereby becoming our contingencies of self-worth. And here's the thing that we need to know about contingencies of self-worth. The thing about contingencies of self-worth is that they are never, 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 never true. Why? Because our worth as human beings is not contingent. Our worth as human beings is inherent. So anytime we are organizing our life and buying into a thing or an accomplishment or a certain trait to make us valuable, right, or to earn our worth, we are making a fundamental error in the way that we are organizing our life, because no one thing is what makes any of us valuable. No accomplishment is what makes any of us valuable. The way we look is not what makes any of us valuable. All of us are endowed with a certain value, right? A certain worth at birth. That is my belief. And actually, there's some really interesting research that shows that before we are trained by society, we all share that belief, right? Like that belief that our life has inherent worth independent of our traits and the things that we do is actually an instinct. And before a certain age, what you can see is that children do not react to put downs or criticism. They might feel sad, but they don't react to it in a way of internalizing themselves as inferior, right? And so this, to me, is the crux of what millennial burnout is all about, is that millennials are suffering from more contingent self-worth than any prior generation. That is what I make of the BuzzFeed article on millennial burnout. And that is incredibly sad. Like, if that is the case, and I wonder how we could get some research on that, but if that is the case, that is deeply, deeply sad for us. And we should consider it, I think, our foremost duty to break free of the sort of chain holds of our contingencies of self-worth. So as I said already, you know, anytime that we are orienting around a belief that our worth is based on a thing that we do or accomplish or are, we are operating under a false belief. And when we are orienting around a false belief, we are inflicting suffering on ourselves. Okay, so given that, based on this BuzzFeed article, what I take away is that the reason we are so burned out is because we have become the generation that is most indoctrinated with contingencies of self-worth. We're more deeply steeped as a generation in contingencies of self-worth than any generation before, meaning we believe even more strongly than all the prior generations that our value and our worth as human beings comes not from being a human being, not from our life force, right, or our existence, but rather that our value and our worth comes from the things that we accomplish, the way that we engage with or are responded to by others, the way that we look, etc. Anything that's measurable, right? Whereas previous generations, yeah, I believe that they had those contingencies of self-worth, but that they weren't as indoctrinated as the millennial generation. And therefore, you know, maybe they thought like, well, maybe like half of my worth comes from, you know, what my job is and how I look and how well liked I am. But there's another half. There's a baseline 50% that I'm going to have no matter what. And the way that I see it is kind of that millennials take away, we've eliminated that baseline 50%. It's like either you have worth or you're complete garbage, right? And so the baseline 50% still is not the ideal, but at least it's something whereby it eliminates the necessity to be constantly, constantly thinking and agonizing over how to fulfill these contingencies of self-worth. And I hope that what you're starting to see is that, of course, if we have adopted a deep belief that our value and our worth is dependent on the things that we do, achieve, are recognized, are liked, etc., then we are going to be in a constant state of stress because there is no room to just simply exist. Right? If our existence is inherently valueless, unless proven otherwise, then there is no space to just exist. And therefore, we are completely burned out, right? If there's no space in which to just simply exist without the need to prove or achieve or become anything, then that means during 100% of our waking hours, we are subconsciously thinking about how to prove our worth. How fucking exhausting does that sound? Alexia, do you relate? Are you relating to what I'm saying? Does it make any sense? And B, does it sound exhausting?
You have hit the nail on the head. So here at Full Service Radio, we have lots of other podcasts. I just finished engineering a podcast for The Tidbit, an episode for The Tidbit. And this author, Rahaf Harfouch, just wrote a book called Hustle and Float, which basically kind of touches on the same thing that you're saying. So the hustle is what we align ourselves with more often, in that we have to always be producing and always be proving our worth and our work ethic, which is so funny because I feel like on the inside, I intrinsically know that work and labor is a system that's set up against us. But I still ascribe to it. Like, I still feel like if I'm not busy or if I don't allow myself time to, as she describes, float, which is just to,
I love that,
allow whatever forces to push me along the way.
Yes.
I don't allow time for that. So
love.
I loved it too. Right. I think, it is incredibly relatable. And it's something that I'm thinking about for sure now, is how to, just let go a little bit, because I feel like I'm the one who's perpetuating my burnout, if that makes sense. If I could just like, get in touch with the fact that it's okay to rest.
Right.
That would be great. So I need help, I think, in justifying that for myself, the rest part.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me see if I can help you with that, Alexia.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what I relate to that, and also what I would say to justifying the rest part, is that the rest is justified if and when we recognize the truth that we already have all of the value and the worth that we're ever going to have.
Nothing we ever do. This is actually something important that I realized in a conversation with a client, and a reminder that all of us can give ourselves. Nothing that you ever do or do not do can ever increase or decrease your worth. Your worth is inherent and immeasurable. So that, to me, that realization and that truth is liberating, A, because it means that we're free. You know, it means that, like, if we fuck something up, we haven't diminished our value as a person. You know, if we don't do something, we haven't diminished our value as a person. But by the same token, if we do something great, if we accomplish something, if we become famous, if we change the world, that too does not increase our value and our worth as a human being. That is a thing that we get to do because we have this opportunity to be alive, and we should do it if and because it calls to us, it tugs at our soul. It's the way that we desire and crave to spend our life. We're not doing it to prove or to earn our worth. And so I think that's a great starting place, that the first way that we can begin to shed this system of contingencies of self-worth and orienting ourselves in that way, which leads to chronic burnout, is to understand that nothing we ever do can diminish or increase our worth as a human being. And therefore, we can make different decisions. And if the decisions that we're making are still the ones we want to make, great. That means that we have somehow succeeded in organizing our life in a way that is driven by our core values, something we've talked about, by our spirit, by our humanity, rather than by our contingencies of self-worth. But if we remove those contingencies of self-worth from the equation, then it also becomes less of a chronic stressor on our brain. Okay. So that is what we are going for. And Alexia, what this book that the person who hosts the tidbit is writing, it sounds like, yes. Is that right?
She had a guest who wrote the book.
Ah, okay. Got it. Cool. So Hustle and Float. I love that. And it reminds me of, and I think that this kind of explains nicely why the millennial generation, how it came to be that the millennial generation is perhaps, this is a theory, right? This is a theory that I am proposing, became that we are the generation with the most contingencies ever, right? Or with our worth most dependent on our contingencies of self-worth than any generation before. And that's why we're burned out. I've seen people wearing this shirt from Flywheel. Sorry, I'm about to call out Flywheel kind of hardcore, but Flywheel has this saying, and it says never coast. And so I see people wearing this shirt. It says never coast. And the first time I saw it, I was like, what a fucking shitty catchphrase. Like, this is like the life motto that is being promoted to our generation. Never coast. Okay, let's break down why that is problematic. Number one, coasting. Okay, so we're talking about a stationary bike, but if we're talking about an actual bike, coasting is the only fun part of riding a bike. It's literally the most enjoyable part of riding a bicycle. Okay. And I believe that coasting can also be the most enjoyable part of being alive, right? And so this idea of never coasting, that to me is extremely problematic, because what it means is that if you should never coast, then what is the alternative? The alternative is always pedal, right? Like, what? So we're supposed to just constantly be pedaling our fucking asses off until the day that we die? Oh my goodness. Like, this is not cool. This is really not cool. But I think, sorry, Flywheel, but it's not cool. But also, Flywheel, it's not your fault, because this is the message that we as a generation have internalized, not just from Flywheel, but from like thousands and millions of different sources. Right. And so to me, it's like, okay, yes, pedal your bike when you need to pedal your bike. You can't expect to get up a hill without pedaling. You know, if you don't pedal, you will never be able to enjoy coasting. That is also a fact. But at the same time, to Alexia's point, if you do not believe in the inherent value and preciousness of your life, independent of the things that you accomplish, then you will never, ever, ever be able to enjoy coasting. Because what coasting means is being able to take a second, right? Take a second to sit back and stop doing and just appreciate the beauty and miraculousness of what already is, right? To be able to take in the awesomeness of your own existence. And if you have an inherent belief that your existence is not awesome and full of value, independent of the things that you do and accomplish, then you will never be able to do that. And just think for a second about how exhausting that sounds. And so that is my understanding of why we as millennials are so damn burned out. And it's not because we're doing so much. It's because we constantly have on our mind the necessity to prove and to earn our worth. And we are so fucking afraid that if we don't do that for a moment, then our worth will disappear, that we will cease to have value as a person. And that is simply a false belief. Everyone has value from the moment they exist on this planet. And what we choose to do with our life, that's up to us, but that's not where our worth comes from. Rather, the things that we choose to spend our day and our time on, those things are for us. You know, those things are the things that we get to do in order to sort of most enjoy and like relish in this life that we've been given. And I think part of what we need to understand is that when we accomplish things, when we work hard on things, when we sacrifice for things, when we go through pain for something, that's not a thing that we're doing to earn our worth. And if it is, then like that's a mistake, right? Like that's coming from a mistaken belief. Rather, that is a thing that we're doing because whether we know it or not, that is the way of spending our day and our time and our energy and emotion that actually feels most satisfying, most fulfilling, most life-giving, most honest, most authentic to us. And so in order to exit millennial burnout, we have to make the leap from doing things in order to prove or earn our worth. We need to eliminate that from the equation and make the leap to doing things because that is what we believe is the right thing to do, or that is what we believe is the thing that is calling us to do, or that is what we believe will give us the most joy or fulfillment, or that is the thing that we believe will allow us to have a pure conscience, any of those things, right? But we're doing it not to prove ourselves, we're doing it because it's what feels best to us. In other words, if it's not what feels best, then don't do it. Your worth does not depend on it, right? So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to share 5 specific steps that have helped me to begin liberating myself from my demons, aka contingencies of self-worth, and thereby limiting my level of burnout.
The track you're listening to during this break is Bring a Little Love by Keto. For more information, follow us at fullserviceradio.org.
Welcome back to This Miraculous Life.
I'm your host, Sarah Oliveri Olumba, and today we are talking about how to A, overcome millennial burnout, but on the bigger picture, how to liberate ourselves from our contingencies of self-worth, which are the cause of chronic burnout. So I want to share with you five steps that I came up with essentially for myself as well as clients that can help us on the pathway to starting to exit the burnout mindset. So here we go. The first step, and I've shared a few of these sort of sprinkled in throughout previous episodes, but the first step is number one, know that the demons, so the demons and contingencies of self-worth, that's a synonym, okay? So demons, aka contingencies of self-worth. Know that the demons do not diminish the core values or the good present in the same moment, okay? And here's the action. Instead of leaning out because of discomfort or insecurity, lean in to the good, okay? So let me read it again. Know that your contingencies of self-worth do not diminish the core values present in that same moment or experience or challenge or thing. Instead of leaning out because of the discomfort or insecurity caused by your contingencies of self-worth, lean in to the good. Okay? So what does this mean? This means that if there is something that you have a desire or that you're being drawn to do because of your core values, right? Because it resonates with you on a deep level, because you think it will be life-giving for you, whatever. But you also have a contingency of self-worth that's telling you, don't do that. You're going to make a fool of yourself. You're going to come in last. People are going to think you're a loser, blah, blah, blah. Do it anyway. Okay, I'll give you a personal example. I started doing CrossFit like 4 years ago. And when I started, it was all good. It was fine because I was like, oh, I've never done this before. You know, I have no expectations. But I was entering CrossFit with some contingencies of self-worth, some demons. So some of my contingencies of self-worth are fitness, being likable, being liked, right? Competitiveness, how I compare to others, right? So I was entering the CrossFit experience with those demons. So after about a year, I started to become incredibly anxious and self-conscious because I wasn't good at CrossFit, you know, because I was in this environment, and CrossFit is an environment where your performance is clear and obvious to everyone around, right? And so I started to feel incredibly inferior and self-conscious and sort of tormented by the idea that other people around, the people at my gym, were witnessing me not fulfilling my contingencies of self-worth, right? We're seeing me not be as fit as what I think is necessary for me to have value, right? And we're seeing me not compare to others in the way that I think is necessary for me to have value. And therefore, those other two things also called into question my contingency of self-worth around likability and being liked. And so this really caused me distress. Like, it caused me to lose sleep at night. It caused me to feel really humiliated, you know, on some occasions. And I started to think, wow, like, maybe I should quit. This thing is really stressing me out. It's not even my job, you know. But as I thought more about it, I realized that all of the things about participating in CrossFit that were causing me stress and anxiety and negative feelings, all of those things were coming not from my core values, not from what drew me to do it in the first place, but rather from my demons, from my contingencies of self-worth. And so therefore I knew the only way to make these demons less powerful over me is to continue, in spite of the fact that I may always be, you know, one of the worst performers in the room. And if I can continue, if I can say, you know what, I'm going to thrive even in an environment where I am one of the lowest performers,
then I have gained power over that contingency. That contingency no longer rules my life. Does that, Alexia, does this particular step make sense?
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Just reconsider. I like it.
Yeah, reconsider. And basically, so the bottom line of this first step is, if you feel anxiety, distress, insecurity, discomfort in doing something that you think you kind of want to do, really examine if the anxiety, distress, discomfort is coming from a contingency of self-worth or a demon. And if it is, fucking ignore it. Incur the distress. Because it is only by incurring the distress caused by the demons that you send the message to the demons, fuck your distress. I don't care. I'm willing to be distressed because I know that you don't matter. You're a lie, right? If the distress is coming from a core value, if the thing that you're doing feels dishonest, right, or inauthentic, that's a totally different story. But if the distress is coming from a demon, then the distress is not to be paid attention to, basically. It's not to be a thing that dictates your decision. So that is step number one. Step number two, and it's similar. Step number two is similar. It is okay if the feelings caused by demons are present, but do not let that keep you away from your true desires. Okay, so I'll read it again. It is okay if the feelings caused by the demons are there, are present, but do not let that keep you away from your true desires, right? So, you know, I think an example of this would be if someone wants to share a message that they have for the world. Let's say somebody wants to come on my show, right? But they're deathly afraid of public speaking and of speaking to an audience, but they have this pull that, like, this is just something that they want to try. You know, they want to put their voice out there. They want to share something that they have to say with the world, right? But their demons are like, you're going to sound nervous. You're going to sound silly. You know, people are going to think that you're not a good public speaker. This is another one to be like, who cares? You know, be willing to incur the embarrassment, to incur the distress, to incur the humiliation in order to do a thing that you deeply desire to do. Right. So this one is really about, like, don't be afraid to do something that causes you stress and anxiety. And if it does cause you stress and anxiety, that's okay. Don't let that stand between you and what you truly desire. Number three, do not let the demons trick you into thinking that you have lower or lesser worth. So this is a way of reminding yourself. This is a reminder that you give yourself. And I think this one comes in handy when the demons, the contingencies of self-worth, have already been called into question, right? So if I do give a talk and I bomb, right? Or if I'm in an environment and I'm not being embraced, I feel ostracized and I feel like people don't like me, right? There's going to be pain there. You know, there's going to be the pain of failure. There's going to be the pain of rejection. Those are real. But when our contingency of self-worth gets involved, then there's an additional pain layered on top of it of believing that not only are we experiencing the pain of disappointment or rejection or not being included, but in addition to that, we are experiencing the pain of believing that that means we now have a diminished worth. Our value as a person is now diminished. And that is what makes it hard for us to continue, right? That is the one that would cause us to say, I'm never even going to attempt this again. That is what would cause us to shut down, right? And to just feel like our life is not even worth continuing to give care and attention and appreciation to. And that is also what would cause it to become something that we're not just heard about for, you know, the immediate future, but that we go on to, if we experience a failure or rejection, that we go on to ruminate about and have anxious thoughts about for an extended period of time. So usually, let's say like I bombed a talk on a Monday. If I'm still thinking about that talk on Friday, that means there's probably a contingency of self-worth involved. It's not just that I'm disappointed that I didn't do a good job. It's that I'm having trouble justifying my value as a human being given that I didn't do a good job. And so that is when we bring in step three. Don't let the contingency trick me into thinking that I have lower or lesser worth. That is not true. As we said earlier, nothing you ever do or do not do can increase or diminish your worth. Step number four, allow yourself to sit with discomfort and not clamor towards making it disappear. Allow your true values to inform your behavior, even though that means the discomfort of an unmet contingency of self-worth may linger. Okay, so this means that when you are in a position where your contingency of self-worth is causing you that discomfort, that insecurity, that feeling of inferiority, let it be. Do not try to fix it, because by trying to fix it, you are validating its truth, right? By trying to fix it, you're saying, yep, it's true that my worth is dependent on this thing. So in order to reclaim my worth, I am going to fix the problem. So for example, let me relate this back to the instance that I already gave in my own life of trying out CrossFit, which I still do, by the way. And so what this would mean is that according to step four, not only do I continue to do CrossFit because I know it's something that I find enlivening, you know, and energizing, and that makes me feel fully embodied, right? Even though it also causes me to feel anxious and inferior and insecure because of my contingencies of self-worth, not only do I continue to participate, but I also continue to participate without any attachment to fixing the things that are causing the insecurity in the first place. Okay? So in other words, I do not continue with CrossFit with the thought that, okay, well, I'm going to continue, but I'm going to become really good, you know, or I'm only going to choose movements or, you know, weights, etc., that allow me to start to perform in a way that is better relative to other people at the gym, right? So in other words, I'm not going to continue with CrossFit with attachment to proving my fitness, right? I'm not going to continue with the thought of, well, it's okay because I'm just going to get a lot better, right? Or I'm going to focus on this movement and that movement so that I can show to the people around that actually I can be good at CrossFit. Nah, I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to say, I'm going to keep going to CrossFit because I find it life-giving, and I'm going to keep going with acceptance of my level of capability, even if that level of capability is always low. If my level of capability improves naturally, fine, whatever. But I am going to continue to go, and my goal is actually going to be not to improve at CrossFit, but rather to improve at being comfortable with showing up to CrossFit and being last, right? We have this thing at CrossFit called the whiteboard, where you publish your times, like what you achieve in the workout. And so a goal would be to continue going to CrossFit and not to it, basically when you enter your scores in Whiteboard, it shows like who's first and who's last, like who lifted the most amount of weight and who lifted the least. So what this step four would mean is to be able to continue showing up to CrossFit, which was one of the earlier steps, but also to be able to be last in the ranking of who finished the workout first, who finished last, who finished, who lifted the most weight, who lifted the least, to be able to consistently be okay with being last, if that's what it is, and to not have a goal. So this is the crux of it, to not have a goal of becoming better than other people, right? To not have a goal of doing the thing that is going to make my contingency of self-worth become less relevant. Rather, my goal should be to become more comfortable with what is currently causing me discomfort. So my goal is not to become better than other people. My goal would be to be more comfortable with not being as good as other people. Does that make sense, Alexia?
Yeah, I like how you flipped that and flipped it in a way that serves yourself the best. And I'm curious, how did that work out for you?
It's working out great. Like,
awesome.
There was like a year, at least a year of just like total anxiety, honestly, when I really thought that I should definitely quit. But then like, this is why I think these steps are important, because by sort of forcing myself to participate in spite of that anxiety, and like really at that point, like honestly, I think what I was realizing and why the anxiety was so great is because what I was realizing is that the nature of CrossFit, I'm never going to be one of the best. Like unless I dedicate my life to, which would not be aligned with my core values, just the way that my body is made, like, yeah, I'm improving, I am getting better, but like, I'm never going to be able to lift like the most, like even like in the top 50% of like lifting the most weight at my gym, you know, and things like that. Realizing that even if I continue with this, I'm always going to have to deal with the discomfort of being in the bottom 50%, you know, on certain things. And that is incredibly uncomfortable to me. And am I going to do it anyway? And I did it anyway. And I think by getting over the hump of doing it anyway and like coming to a place of acceptance that contingency of self-worth was never going to be met, if that's the goal, and if you can get to that, then that contingency of self-worth, it becomes no longer a contingency of self-worth. It becomes less powerful, and therefore it doesn't cause you as much anxiety. And so I think I've gotten to that place where I have a lot less anxiety about being not a top 50% performer, you know, and that's like, to me, that is so much more of a win than becoming a top 50% performer, because that win liberates my whole fucking life, right? Rather than just like pleasing that contingency of self-worth in that one environment. So the very last step, number five, is allow yourself to say no to things that you are only doing to validate yourself, earn your worth, or please your demons. So unlike the first step, which is about letting yourself do a thing, even though your demon is like, you can't do this. This makes you seem less valuable. Makes you seem less important. This makes you feel less valuable, less important. This is about saying no to a thing that you would be doing in order to prove your value or prove your importance. So a great example for me here about, you know, I have a demon of likability, I have a demon of attractiveness. So examples here would be saying no to going to a party that I really don't want to go to, but I'm afraid that if I don't go, the whole group that party revolves around is no longer going to like me and is no longer going to include me. But really deep down, I don't want to go to that party. So I'm going to say no, because I would only be going to validate that contingency of self-worth. Or another example, let's say I do want to go to the party, but I don't want to dress up. I don't want to put on makeup. I don't want to put on a sexy dress. Another way of saying no to something that I'm only doing to validate a demon or a contingency of self-worth is if I don't feel like that, showing up to the party in what I perceive to not be my most attractive, best, you know, best form, best looking form, and being willing to show up to the party anyways, because that's what I want to do, but saying no to the part that I would only be doing to please or validate my demon. So basically the summary is we need to, number one, do the thing that our core value is calling us to do, even if it makes us feel uncomfortable, right? Deal with the discomfort, do the thing. Number two, know that those feelings of insecurity that you incur by doing it, it's okay to let those feelings remain. Don't try to fix them. Number three, remind yourself that nothing you do can diminish your worth. Number four, do not clamor towards making any discomfort caused by a demon or a contingency of self-worth go away. Deal with the discomfort. If it's caused by a lie, it's meaningless. And trying to make it go away validates the lie. And number five, when you realize that you're doing something to please your demon or to fulfill a contingency of self-worth, don't do it. Say no. Have a miraculous day. I hope that this helps all of you and me as well liberate ourselves from chronic burnout. Talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.